I'm Peter Smith, and I'm delighted to welcome you to our special Christmas edition of the Market Dojo podcast. But if you're listening to this after December the 25th, don't worry, we'll hardly mention mince pies at all, so please do keep listening. And today I'm joined by Alan Rafiq and Pete Glass from procurement technology firm Market Dojo. Hi, guys.
Hello, Peter.
Hi, Peter.
So I'm going to be talking in a minute about the link between giving gifts and good procurement practice, and then discussing that topic further with Alan and Pete. But before that, and instead of our usual news headlines, we thought we'd take a look at some procurement highlights and lowlights of 2019. So my highlight, I think the valuation placed on procurement tech firms demonstrated how the wider business world has caught on to the importance of what we do in the sector. So Scout RFP being bought by Workday just the other week for $540 million when their revenues are probably less than $20 million a year is pretty incredible. And Jaguar being valued at $1.5 billion plus by investment firm Cinven. Now, we have to translate that into organizations actually getting more benefit out of their software and out of procurement generally, of course. But it does seem to show a recognition of the possibilities, I think. So, Alan, a highlight from you.
Thanks, Peter. I think the general movement in the market of consolidation and investment is really exciting, actually. I mean, it will hopefully demonstrate a turning point on the value placed in procurement in the wider context. And obviously, good news for Market Dojo. I hope our valuation is increasing at the same rate as Scout. I think my real highlight is actually on a personal front, as Market Dojo has more than doubled in size in the last year. We have a wonderful team, amazing potential with our growing solutions and a varied customer base, both in terms of size and the geography. It's a really fantastic year that we just had.
And you, Pete?
So this is a difficult one for me, as I've recently taken a year away from Market Dojo and worked in the world of ERP. So I haven't been too involved in procurement, although I can link this in nicely to my highlight and say that it's rejoining Market Dojo.
Yeah, I think you had to say that, really, didn't you?
I've got two of Alan on here as well. But since I've been away, the team has grown from about 8 to 22, and there's been a new contract module just released. And the team have a really exciting roadmap for 2020. So I know we joke, but I'm generally really excited to be back on the team.
Excellent. So let's move on to some lowlights, perhaps, for the year. And I haven't seen much this year from UK public sector procurement that really got me excited. It's all gone a bit low profile. And the big restructuring of NHS procurement hasn't delivered really as yet. The savings that trusts hospitals are supposed to get seem very elusive. And in central government, Brexit has just swallowed everything, really. So other big questions from the affordability of defence capital projects or the crisis in social care, which involves procurement and suppliers, all seem to slip out the public eye, really. And about the only time public procurement got any great profile was with the Brexit ferries deal. That was the contract with the company that didn't have any boats, which would have been quite funny if it hadn't cost the taxpayer many, many million. So, Alan, your low light?
I mean, as a low light, I'm afraid I would also quote the continued mistakes in the outsourcing of public services. I mean, these mistakes have cost the taxpayers £14.3 billion, according to analysis from Think Tank Reform over the past 3 years. The HS2 and Crossrail projects are ones that come up frequently with overruns and unexpected costs in Crossrail have actually cost the government an extra £2.8 billion, while another £600 million has been lost from income from passengers due to delays in opening the line. However, the general uncertainty in HS2 is a podcast in itself, if not an entire series.
Yeah, the Crossrail story is an interesting one, actually. I might come back to that another day as well. And for you, Pete?
Yeah, the low light for me is probably seeing the way that e-sourcing and procurement is seen from the wider business. So when I've been speaking to heads of retail, it's been a real shame that procurement software is seen purely as a tool to beat up suppliers on price, and procurement teams are still seen as blockers to large purchases. The view of procurement teams has come a long way since I initially joined Market Dojo back in 2016. But I still feel like there's a long way to go.
I think you're right. I think there's a huge difference these days between the very best procurement functions and teams and the great mass, to be honest, and still a lot of catching up to do. So, OK, definitely. Thanks, guys. And we'll come back to you in a few minutes. But now, with a nod towards the season, I'm going to look at the parallels between giving gifts and our world of business procurement. Now, I've heard people over the years say that procurement is just like shopping. The ex-procurement director of British Airways used to say it in interviews when she was involved with SIPS, the Chartered Institute, and it used to drive me mad because basically procurement is not like shopping, but it is a bit more like buying gifts or shopping for someone else, because we're not buying for ourselves when we do corporate procurement, of course. But there are some similarities when we look at giving gifts and shopping for somebody else. We buy on behalf of budget holders generally, the marketing director, the CTO, the factory manager. So while I won't push the gift analogy too far, you can see a link there. I'm not buying what I want to buy, I'm buying on behalf of others. So given the season, let's look at the top five mistakes people make when buying gifts and see if we can learn anything from that in terms of professional procurement. Mistake number one is a lack of planning. We've all seen him, and yes, it usually is a him, I'm afraid, when it comes to gifts. Christmas Eve in the petrol station or the local bargain booze, hurriedly looking for a decent bottle of wine, a box of chocolates that doesn't smell too much of petrol, or even a 5-litre bottle of ready-mixed windscreen wash. I'm sure Auntie Ethel will love that. Or the parent trying to get this year's favourite toy in Hamleys at the last minute and participating in that British favourite, the Christmas shopping riot. So do plan ahead. Give yourself enough time to conduct a proper procurement process. That's the message here. But one note of caution. We have to retain some flexibility. For instance, in business procurement, we don't want to hold too much stock and get caught out when requirements change. You don't want to spend a fortune on your girlfriend's present in September, then find she's run off with her fitness instructor in October. So planning ahead doesn't always mean buying ahead. Moving on to mistake number two. This is all about getting the specification and quality right. If you're buying something thinking you know what the recipient wants, you must make sure it meets the desired specification. And this has a very obvious parallel with business procurement, of course. I've always found it hard to buy my wife jewellery because she has very particular likes and dislikes, which I've never really got to grips with. Better maybe to let her choose and then just turn up with the credit card. And my wife feels the same about buying me CDs, I should say. I also bought my mum a box of Black Magic every year for Christmas from about the age of 10. And I think I was about 35 before she confessed that she didn't really like dark chocolate. In a business context, procurement folk can sometimes be guilty of assuming they know better than the stakeholder or budget holder what they really want. We might assume a lower spec and a lower price will be okay, for instance, but perhaps it won't be. So mistake number three, linked to number one really, is not using competition properly when you're sourcing your gifts. I'm not really a leave it to Christmas Eve person, but I have succumbed sometimes to the let's just go to John Lewis and buy everything approach. Now, there are many worse places to use as your one-stop shop. But even then, ideally, you'd look more widely, compare pricing and other factors rather than just stocking up at one place. Mind you, Amazon, of course, has done pretty well promoting that approach to us. But in a business context, it's easy to forget the power of competition. Even if you have a good long-term supplier, at least the heat of competition will keep them honest. Mistake number four, it's not thinking strategically or considering the big picture when gifting or in your procurement life. It's the classic error of not checking whether batteries are included and ending up with the crying toddler who doesn't understand why the toy doesn't work. It's making sure you don't buy Uncle Arthur or Auntie Ethel a nice bottle of whiskey when they've just joined Alcoholics Anonymous. So this comes back to understanding the strategic drivers for your organization and how what you're buying relates to those. That's actually a pretty deep topic I've been speaking about at conferences recently. But just one example. Are you looking for suppliers that will allow you to follow a low-cost strategy in terms of what you provide to your customers? Or are you seeking innovation, new ideas, and uniqueness from your suppliers? Those different strategic goals require very different procurement approaches. And finally, mistake number five, not considering the whole life cost. An extreme example might be buying little Johnny or Jemima a puppy for Christmas. Lovely. But how much will that cost in dog food, vet's bills, rubber gloves and pooper scoopers for those lovely walks in the park? Well, these days we might consider a subscription to Spotify or Amazon Prime. A lovely gift in some ways. But my mother-in-law bought us a Sky TV subscription many years ago. And she did check that we wanted it, or my wife wanted it anyway. But of course, once you have that, you're never going to cancel it unless you have quite extraordinary willpower. So how many thousands of pounds in terms of the whole life cost of that gift has it cost us over the last 20 years or so? I don't work it out. And I've even seen procurement departments buying something because it gave them an initial saving, which counted towards their bonus, knowing that the whole life cost for the product was greater than alternatives. But procurement didn't care. Let someone else take the hit on their budget. So the cheap printer with really expensive ink cartridges, or even the apparently good PFI private finance initiative deal, where the building rental looked good value, but all the hidden costs and all the supplier's profit was tied up in really expensive mandated services over the whole life of the contract. And that's why we hear the horror stories about it costing a hospital £500 to change a light bulb. So there are our five tips for gift giving, all hopefully with a read across to our more regular procurement world. And I'll open that up for discussion now with Alan and Pete. So let's start with my first point, Alan. Have you seen examples of that leaving it too late approach to procurement?
Oh, thanks, Peter. Yeah, endlessly. I mean, we speak to many procurement people. As you can imagine, we're obviously trying to encourage people to try our wares. We're self-service, on-demand solutions, accessible, easy to use, easy to pick up. However, it seems that our sales approach goes a little too well sometimes, and we often get calls literally on the day or the week of the tender deadline with a request to run an RFQ or an auction. Obviously, we are happy to oblige and we give a bit of extra support to ensure success. In fact, our whole philosophy is around reducing the time taken to run these activities to be more practical. As previous consultants, we would spend 200 to 300 hours on an auction, whereas now we have seen that this time is much reduced and can be much reduced without actually affecting the professionalism. However, there is a limit to this, and by not giving enough time, mistakes can creep in, and ultimately you may end up paying more or giving yourself a headache post-tender.
Yeah, there's actually a really recent example of this as well, where a customer only gave their suppliers 2 days to get ready for the auction. So as Alan mentioned, that's fine, and we can help you out, but you need to think about the suppliers. You need competition to successfully procure, so give your suppliers enough time to arrange this in their calendar. You need 100% of the supplier's attention, and leaving it late just won't guarantee that.
No, that's right. I was just thinking, even with conventional written tenders, I mean, I've seen examples in the public sector and private for that matter, where, you know, there's a 50-page document to complete, a proposal and all the rest of it, and suppliers are given just a couple of days to do it, and you just won't get good responses there, or you'll get people dropping out. So anyway,
exactly.
What about the cases of buying the wrong thing, the specification failure, if you like? Any tips or experiences there?
Many thoughts come to mind there, Peter, of me trying to buy clothes for my wife or perfume, but I think we should probably all put that aside. In the procurement world, there are many numerous examples of this, which many companies obviously try to put quickly behind them. From forgetting accessory items which are needed, like laptop charges, to having aerospace products made in the slightly wrong material. However, an area where we continually will see mistakes is in the world of print. I'm not sure if that's classed as specification or design. I mean, the very process of checking print can introduce more errors. There was one example of a mobile phone operator making a print run on some marketing materials in the hundreds of thousands, missing a mistake, reprinting, only to find at the last minute the brochure had a photo on the back of a PC with the competitor's website on the screen. My advice here is simply, you know, paying attention to detail and making sure all the right people are involved in the process.
Thanks, Alan. I'd like to add on that point as well, where it's not often the main product that's misunderstood, but the accessory purchases as well. So one example I saw a few times while working with startup retailers over the past year was ensuring that you had the correct shipping terms. So X Works and Free On Board were the most common, but the issue was the additional costs that just weren't accounted for and how it could cost the supplier more. Alan's point about checking your products is spot on, but buyers should also remember how the product is getting to the final location and how much that will cost.
And that's a great point. Takes me back to the beginning of my procurement career, buying raw materials and the cost of shipping dairy products in from different countries. If you got that wrong, it could eat up any savings I'd negotiated on the actual product price very easily. So, yeah, that competition angle. Auctions obviously are one of the most direct ways of driving competition. Do you see clear benefits maybe when your users haven't previously competed a particular item in the past or haven't done so for some time?
Yeah, we've got a lot of experience here. I mean, firstly, I could say that the biggest driver to savings potential is around when it was last bought, through which means and what the competition was. Our category dojo tool, which predicts savings, has empirical analysis, and this part of the analysis is one of the greatest drivers. I do remember when I was in a previous life as a consultant, running a contingency fee project, and the company was looking at an office supplies tender, and the buyer there thought that there the last time they did it they had enough competition. We ran the tender, and the long and short of it was a £1 million tender, and they made £600,000 of saving. And you can imagine that the buyer was slightly aghast by that. The team was slightly aghast. Our fees as a contingent fee project, and so we don't do that now. We just provide software. But in the previous life, they were huge, and so in the end, no one was really happy. And that, and the mistake that was made was just that, you know, in thinking that you had enough competition in the previous tender, which turned out not to be the case.
Yeah, I'd like to have an example of where timing of the event can be key to driving the competition and the savings. And my example is onions. So we had a customer who was a large supplier of the pre-made meals that you see in the Witherspoons pubs. We'd been speaking to them for a while about running auctions, and they were a bit unsure about what category to go with first. So their market intelligence showed them that the recent crop of UK onions was a successful one. So they decided that this would be their first auction. They ended up saving about an average of 27% across the six slots, which was well over 200K's worth of savings. And then they decided to do the same auction later that year when the crop wasn't as good, and they actually saw an increase of 3% from the previous year. So yes, it does show that how a first time and a well-judged time can directly impact the savings.
Interesting. So the price went up presumably because the market price was going up for onions.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
The second time. So the auction you would expect would still deliver value. It's just that sometimes that value, yeah, the absolute price might have gone up, but it's still good value for money, as it were.
Yes, yeah, they were still very happy with the price only going up 3%, as they did expect it to be much higher. So still value from the auction.
I'll do a commercial for Wetherspoons. I was in the Wetherspoons in Surbiton the other week, and I had a tuna melt with chips and salad and a pint of really good real ale for £5.75 at lunchtime, just or wow. £5.79, I think. Incredible value. So moving away from Wetherspoons and beer, back to competition. Something I've always found quite an interesting question: how many suppliers do you really need to get good competition? And back to Christmas, I'm not going to visit every toy shop and website in the world and try and negotiate the best deal for the cheapest Lego Hogwarts Great Hall, which looks brilliant, actually, but my daughter's 29, so she might have got a bit past that stage, I think. But will I get much better results in business terms if I have an auction or another sourcing exercise and I have six suppliers rather than two, or 10 instead of six? What do you think?
Well, I think we should talk a bit more about Lego, because my son's five and he absolutely loves Ninjago at the moment. So we could have a good chat about that. But we have also drawn on much analysis in how much competition affects the results. To achieve more than the average savings, the biggest gain is by having between 5 and 10 suppliers bidding. Okay. And the average in the Market Dojo tool on auctions is about 21%. And overall, with RFQ and auction put together, it's about 16%. In reality, in the tool, the average number of suppliers invited to an auction, for example, is 27, with an average of 6 taking part. The simple fact is competition gives better results and more options. However, if you don't have the competition, there are techniques you can use, for example, a Japanese auction, or maybe looking at a weighted tender. So you do have options.
But it is important to remember supplier fatigue. So imagine each week you're attempting to buy your Lego Hogwarts Great Hall from the same supplier, and there's only one each time. But each time you're outbid every week, every time. And that's the same for suppliers, but in reverse. So if a supplier never wins your business, they'll just stop trying. So the key is to choose your suppliers wisely and not just to add them in for the sake of it to get more suppliers.
I think that's really interesting. I remember when I was a buyer myself running RFQs, and the supplier would either hear that they've won a tender or not hear anything, and they seem to be quite happy with that approach. And an auction, sometimes the benefits of an auction in terms of the feedback to the suppliers can sometimes be the Achilles heel. You know, if a supplier continually finds out that they're not in the best position, they can get quite upset at that. But actually, you know, it needs to be kind of a learning point, because that's simply the truth of where things are in the market. So it's a very interesting thing, that on supplier fatigue.
Yeah, and that feedback should, as you say, should be useful to suppliers, really. Okay, move on to the next question. What about the whole life cost issues? You run a lot of sourcing events with clients. Is there a danger that it's just the upfront costs that people are considering in an event? How do you make sure that they take everything into account, all the lifetime costs?
Yeah, I mean, that is often a fear from buyers looking at an auction for the first time. What we always say is that they shouldn't look at any category to begin with, a view to running an auction. Procurement professionals should just methodically work through the category, and if an auction is a good solution, then so be it. By looking at activities this way, the tender and, if needed, auction at the end can be properly structured to take account of the whole life cycle cost in the documentation and how the event is structured. SLAs need to be properly worked out, a proper contract management plan needs to be in place, and if needed, the tender can be run on a weighted basis, taking price and non-price elements into account. In this era of increasing environmental oversight, this is becoming something of the norm if you are really to consider everything and compare different solutions. The proper forecasting and risk analysis is very important, and simple areas can create wildly fluctuating costs. Even office supplies, for example, can create real problems. I remember a tender where the final solution was very neat. However, in reality, it didn't work out that way, as the procurement department couldn't stop the purchasing of items from outside the core list. I think you can see where this is going. Proper planning prevents poor procurement, the five P's.
Five P's indeed. So let's finish and move away from corporate procurement and have a personal question. So what's the worst gift giving or gift receiving experience you've had? Start with you, Alan.
This would be a scar from my youth, I'm afraid. It was when I was about 9 or 10. I suppose my long and lavish Christmas list contained the desire for a Lego spaceship. There we go, Lego again. I think all the Lego I buy for my son is actually for myself. But my parents or my parents or Santa at the time did buy the Lego spaceship, but labelled it for my brother. You can imagine how I felt as he opened the present to reveal my dream. Now, as my parents had ended up buying us an equal number of gifts, the decision wasn't reversed, and I was staring at my brother for the rest of the day with a longing for that Lego spaceship. But please don't feel too sorry for me. I did get a lot of gifts. My gift receiving experiences are much different from now to in my youth. I was very excited about a teapot for my office desk recently, which allowed me to try different fresh teas. I guess my midlife crisis is here and now.
It doesn't sound like you've quite gotten over that one, Alan, the Lego story. My bad present links directly into Peter's second point about getting the specification and the quality right. So my partner, she loves Game of Thrones and she loves Christmas jumpers. So naturally, I set myself the mission to source a Game of Thrones Christmas jumper. This should have been fairly easy, as there were loads around last year. It was the big season finale, lots of stuff going around for sale. However, as this was just an additional present, I decided to forget about supplier assessments and quality checks, and I just went for the cheapest one I could find. So I think you can tell where I'm going with this, and it wasn't a very good jumper. The image was Jon Snow with a poorly photoshopped Christmas hat on with the words "Let It Snow" written beneath him. I told Cass that this story would be making it onto the podcast, and her response was, "Oh, yeah, that really was an awful present. You're not going to make me wear that this year, are you?"
Well, I hope you do. Just for Christmas week, no more than
Definitely.
that. So, thank you, guys. That's all we got time for today. If we could wish all our listeners season's greetings, good luck for 2020. But of course, if you're listening to this in the springtime, then have a lovely summer. We hope to be back next year with more, but it's goodbye from Alan.
Bye.
Goodbye from Pete.
Bye.
And goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.